Okay, the parasha begins. Hashem says to Moshe, this week we're now coming to a new era, a new portion of the Makos. Last week, Parshas Vaera, we learned about 7 Makos. And this week, we learn about the last 3 Makos. Now, obviously, the fact that Chazal broke up Parshios in such a fashion, we know, I mean, the division of the Parshios goes back very, 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 very far. It goes back, it's not really clear, I mean, we know there were 2 different divisions. There was the division of Eretz Yisrael and the division of Bavel. I'm not even sure if that's correct, but Eretz Yisrael, they finished the cycle in about 2.5 years. No, three and a half years. Twice in Shemitah. Just like every time when do you check your tefillin and mezuzahs? So what did Chazal say? You check twice in 7 years. Well, isn't that strange? Nusach to say you check your tefillin and mezuzahs twice in 7 years? What does that mean? The answer is, how often do you finish Chamisha Chumshei Torah? So the cycle was twice in 7 years. When you finish the cycle, when you get to the Zois HaBrocha, that's when you check your tefillin and your mezuzahs. That's when you check. They're both related to Shemitah. In one Shemitah cycle, you would go through Chamisha Chumshei Torah twice. It had, I think, 275 parashios. We know where the parashios are. It's very interesting. This is a side point. The way we know how many parashios there are is because the Medrash, it was the style of the Medrash to quote a pasuk as a Dibur HaMaskel almost, and then Darshan. And the Medrash, there's certain different types of Midrashim, and certain Midrashim, they don't go pasuk by pasuk. They start with a topic, and then they continue to elaborate upon that topic, and then the next passage, they've skipped a whole bunch of pasuk, and they've skipped a whole bunch of parakim. If you look carefully, what the Medrash is doing is, it's beginning its discussion in the beginning of the parsha. What do you mean the beginning of the parsha? We have only 54 parashios. And in certain midrashim, there are 275 sections of the Medrash. Bingo. Those sections that the Medrash begins were the parashios of the cycle of Eretz Yisrael, where they cycled through the parasha, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, in 3.5 years. Not like what we do. We go through the entire Chamisha Chumshei Torah once a year. It was a different cycle. We have 54 parashios, and Eretz Yisrael, they had 275 parashios, and we don't do this anymore. This ended, I think, Chazal, they ended at the time of the Crusades. At the time of the First Crusade is when it came to an end, historically, anyone still observing Kriyas HaTorah through the old cycle of 275 parashas. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because we should appreciate that when the parashas are broken up into the way what they are, 54 verse 275, it's not just an accident. It was done by design, because there's a message in the division of the parashas. And this week is a very important example of that. Because if last week there are 7 makos, and this week there are 3 makos, that's a very clear statement by Chazal to divide the makos into 2 groups, 7 and 3. The first 7 accomplished one goal, and the last 3 accomplished a different goal. The first 7 basically softened them up, softened up Egypt, and the last 3 is the knockout punch. And the last 3, really, it's all one final wind down. The Mak of Arbe, the Mak of Choshech, and the Mak of Bechoros, and in fact, in Farshim, they go and they delve very deeply into this. And one of the most simplest common denominator of these 3 Makos, of Choshech, of Arbe, Choshech, and Mak of Bechoros, is darkness. Darkness. It says by Choshech, by Yechshach, by Arbe, by the locust, when Moshe says to Paro, we're going to bring locust upon the earth, the Pasuk says, Vatechshach, the earth was dark. By Chas Eskol Ein Haaretz. In the afternoon, we learned Chumash Rashi Unkelis in the afternoon at 7:15. So we actually went through this. We spent time on this and the Rashi and the Unkelis. And there's a very big machlokes between Rashi and Unkelis exactly what the pasuk means. Vatechshach, vatechshach, es ein the I kol aretz. What exactly do those words mean? It's a very deep, profound pasuk. What exactly that pasuk means? The I has a, the earth has an I. What exactly does that mean? It means the sun. It means the ear. There's a very interesting targum on that pasuk. Well, not for now, but it's clear as day. It does state explicitly that the makah of arbeh brought upon this world darkness. Choshech v'yomeish choshech. And what is the ultimate darkness? Makas b'chayos. When Rachmana l'son, a person loses a child, loses a b'char, there's no greater darkness than that. All different types of darkness.
The fact that it was at midnight.
It was at midnight. The fact that it was at midnight also, he's saying that it took place during the Spitz. Rabbi Chol is coming to point out that Makas Becharis took place also during the time of the ultimate darkness, Kichatzoy Salayla. But there are three different types of darkness. There's the darkness, the Ein Vayichas, Es Ein Kol Aretz. The earth is dark, but I can see. And then there's a darkness, V'yomei Shchoshech. I can feel the darkness. And then there's a darkness of the mind. When a person is depressed, when a person lost his Bechor, that's the worst. That's the worst. That's the type of darkness that the mind, of the mind. So there, that's one of many, many mahalchim to explain the significance of why the parishes are broken up as they are, 7 and 3. The first 7 has its own concept. In this week's parasha, the common denominator about the last 3 is the concept of darkness. And we know the more darkness there is for the goyim, ze lumaze makov rafo ulchol bnei yisrael hayor b'moishvaisam. And therefore, if we follow through with this concept, what does that mean? That when there are 3 types of darkness in this week's parasha, vayichas es ein haaretz, the earth is dark. The earth is dark, but person, he can see. But there's a darkness in the earth. It doesn't affect the person per se in his guf. The second darkness is where the person is dark. There's a darkness. He can't even move. The yomei shchoshech. And the third is in the mind. Your future, the banim, the children, the next generation. The first makkah, if there was the earth was dark, what does that mean for Klal Yisrael? It means that the earth is light. There is Yoitzer Or, there is a light, a Lichtigkeit in the Oretz. Which Oretz are we referring to? Eretz Yisrael. In the Makif Arbe is already, what was the whole goal? The whole goal of Yitzias Mitzrayim is Vehevesi. Is to come to Eretz Yisrael. When the Arabic came upon the land, this already, to a degree, it awakened Klal Yisrael to the reality that we're going into the land. Now, why do I say this? Because this again gets very detailed and very technical. Where did the Arabic come from? Hashem blew a ruach kodim, an eastern wind. A ruach kodim. And then when Hashem took away the locust, it says Hashem sent a wind from the west. There's a very big machlokes, Rashi and Mefarshim, what exactly that means. Does that mean that the wind blew in an eastern direction? Or does it mean the wind was in the east and it blew in a westward direction? But whatever it meant when it came, it was the opposite when it left. And what does that do? That basically brings already, what is to the east of Mitzrayim? What is on the east side of Mitzrayim? Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the southern east.
Northeast.
What?
Northeast.
Eretz Yisrael is northeast, but if you go directly along, according to the biblical boundaries, where the Jews were located in Egypt, if you would go due east, straight east, you will be entering into the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael. Look on a map. No?
I think in Egypt they lived near the...
Not today's boundaries.
They lived near the Nile. They didn't live much inland because there wasn't water inland.
Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, according to not the Gevulis of modern-day Israel today, and not according to the Gevulis of during the time of Bayis Sheni, the Gevulis of Eretz Yisrael from the time... Because it says in the Torah also says it says also Mitzrayim. It says well, you have to study the Gevulos. If I'm saying it's not correct, then maybe I'm wrong. But if I'm not mistaken, the Gevulos of Eretz Yisrael, according to the Torah, you study them in Parashas Maaseh. Eretz Yisrael is to the southern, very very southern portion of Eretz Yisrael is on the eastern side of Egypt. Okay, let's not dwell on this. The point is yeah. So this is the only that means that when Hashem brought the Arabic, the pasuk says Hashem brought a ruach kodim and a ruach yom. One brought it, one took it away. There's a machlekes in the mefarshim what exactly those words mean. From Rashi, it's mashma ruach kodim means it was a wind on the east side which blew westward. It blew towards the western direction, which means Eretz Yisrael sent the Arabic. If this thesis is correct, you study the map. Study the map of the Gevulos of Eretz Yisrael in Parshas Maaseh. Parshas Maaseh. You study the Gevulos, not the Gevulos of on the map today of modern-day Israel. Not the Gevulos of what the Jewish people conquered in the time of the Bayis Sheni. And maybe not, the Gevulos of Eretz Yisrael, the Bayis region, what it says in the Torah. Eretz Yisrael is to the east of Egypt. If you don't like this, even though it may not be for everyone here to agree with me that it's due east, it's certainly northeast. It's east. And it says, a Ruach Kodim came and brought the Arbe. Who brought the Arbe? The land of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was the shliach to bring upon the Egyptians the Makev Arba. All the other Makois were internal. There was an internal enemy. We have Dam, the water. You turn on the faucet. What's coming out of the faucet? Blood. Where's the water coming from? The Nile. It's coming from Egypt. Tzvardeya, Kinim, Oroiv. In Egypt, there's a forest in Egypt. It doesn't say that the Oroiv came from America. The Arav came from Mitzrayim, from there. There were different parts of Mitzrayim that had wild animals. The only Makkah which was imported, made in Israel, was Arabic. Hashem sent an eastern wind. Rashi, it does not mean like the average person thinks that the wind was blowing eastwards. No. There was a wind that was blowing on the east of this land. The east of this land happens to be Eretz Yisrael. Whether you want to say it's due east or northeast, we have to study the map. But there's no question that it's on the east side of Eretz Yisrael. And that eastern wind was summoned to take locusts in that vicinity and bring them into Egypt, to blow westward and bring the Arba into Egypt to make the land dark. Zeh the darkness of Egypt in its land was a revelation of the light, the aur of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is participating in this makkah. It's making the land of Egypt dark. Zelu mazed, where the Arba is coming from, or where it's being transported from, this is a land of light, of aur. In the makkah of the Yomesh Choshech, the Egyptians, they couldn't move their bodies. They were stuck in the mud. They couldn't get up, they couldn't, if you're up, you can't go down, if you're down, you can't go up, whatever this means. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael, hoya'or b'moshev o'isam. They had mobility. V'nasati l'chol mahalchim b'in ho'imdim o'ele. The goal of Klal Yisrael is to move, is to grow, to blossom, to flourish, to be productive. You're sitting, you get up, you go up, you get, there's always this movement, this mobility. Mobility is just a mashal, is a metaphor for mobility in the spiritual world, to grow in ruchnius. And then the ultimate R is makas b'chayos, the darkness of the mind. What happened to the Egyptians, that they lost their firstborn, their future. It brought to Klal Yisrael, v'gadata levincha b'yoy mahu leymar. The awe, the light in a person's mind that he has children, grandchildren, doiros. There's an awe in the mind of a future. So we have over here, you know, this is how we're trying to bring out, is that Chazal were very clever in breaking up parashios in such a fashion where they broke up last week into seven and this week into three. And the three of this week are all, the common denominator is darkness. Vatechshach ha'aretz. When the Arabic arrived, the positive vatechshach is ein ha'aretz. There was darkness. Makas choyshech is certainly darkness. And the makah of makas b'choyros is the ultimate darkness. Rabbi Paul pointed out, well, it's darkness and the fact that it took place kachatzayis halayla, in the middle of the night. The middle of the night is the darkest time of the night. Okay, that's the darkest moment of the night. I don't know if we're able to measure that on the instruments. We can measure that, you know, because once it gets dark. What's the difference between if it's 10 o'clock or it's 12 o'clock? But theoretically, you know, it's the middle of the night. That's the spitz of the light, the darkness. But on a different dimension, when the Egyptians lost their firstborn children, their minds became dull, depressed, darkness. That's real darkness. Ze, and the three types of darkness that the Egyptians experienced, it's ze l'uma ze for Klal Yisrael. The darkness of atechshach es ein ha'aretz, it's ze l'uma ze, the or, the light of Eretz Yisrael. How do we know that's true? Because this was the only makah which Eretz Yisrael participated, the land of the Jewish people, it was the weapon which brought upon the Egyptians their darkness. Hashem sent the Ruach Kodim. Where is the Ruach Kodim coming from? Eretz Yisrael. It's on the east side. It's the east wind which blew westwardly towards. That's what Rashi says. I'm not making this up because most people think east wind only the wind is blowing to the east. Like now we have an east. We live in New York, so the wind that blows upon us is the wind that's blowing in the eastern direction. So do you think that's? That's what it means by Mitzrayim. Hashem sent the Ruach Kodim. A wind was blowing east. No, it's not what Rashi says. It means there's a wind that's on the east side of where you are located. And that wind on the east side is going to pick up, make a pickup, like UPS. It's going to pick up a package and it's going to transport it to Egypt. When the east wind transports the package to Egypt, it's going to go westward. But what is the provider, the east wind? What is to the east of the land of Egypt? Eretz Yisrael.
It's not where it comes from.
The location. When it says in the pasuk, a ruach kodim, in this pasuk, according to Rashi, it means there is a wind that if I'm over here, that means the west is here and the east is over there. On the east side, there's a wind blowing there. Whatever that wind, I don't care which direction is blowing in. There's a wind that blows in that part of the world. That wind was summoned by Hashem. I got a job for you. The koyach of ruach on the east side, get to work. I got a mission. This arbe, this locust in the swamp, pick him up and send him over to Egypt. So the east wind goes, picks up the locust, and puts in the GPS coordinates, where is Egypt, and it goes. It happens to be that when it travels, it's traveling westward.
Our weather forecast
is nowadays, yeah. When you hear wind direction, it's always where it's coming from, not where it's going.
Really?
So, no.
Yes, wind direction means
where it's going.
What direction is it coming from? We don't measure where it's going. We measure where it comes from.
Okay, so then it's consistent with what it says in Rashi. Because that would be, I didn't know that. I thought that when you talk about what you say.
He's absolutely right. When you look at the wind vane, it points in the opposite direction.
Okay, where it's coming from. So when it says a ruach kodim, where it's coming from the east, and it's traveling to the west. What is the east of Egypt? Eretz Yisrael. This is the only Makkah where Eretz Yisrael is participating. All the other Makkahs are internal. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Vatechshach es ein ha'aretz. And every Makkah that is for Egypt is a light, is the opposite for the Jewish people, for Klal Yisrael. If the eye, the light, the ayin, whatever, however you want to touch the word ayin, but there's darkness to the land of Egypt, and that darkness is being brought upon them from Eretz Yisrael, that automatically means that the land of Eretz Yisrael is becoming now light. It's illuminated. There's R. Second Makkah. There's darkness.
This is the message from Bnei Israel. You came from Eretz Israel to Egypt, to the west. Now the Arbe is doing it. And now you're going to go out.
You're going back. Then when it went away, it went back, right? It went back. Here's the, follow the Arbe. Just follow the Arbe. It's a Musa Haskel for Klal Yisrael. Follow the Arbe.
Arbe and Zarachem.
And then when it comes to Choshech, is the same thing. Choshech, it was dark for Egypt, and the Bulechol B'nei Yisrael Hoya Or B'Moshe Roysan. And then when it comes to Makas B'Choyrois, B'ni B'Choyri Yisrael. As it all started back in Parsha Shemos. The first thing Hashem said to Moshe, the very first thing was, go tell Paro, B'ni B'Choyri Yisrael. I'm going to kill your firstborn to show you B'ni B'choyri Yisrael. And the ultimate darkness is when Paro, when the Egyptians, they lost their firstborn, the darkness of the mind. But for Klal Yisrael, it was a light. It was an appreciation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cherishes us. Hashem is with us, and Hashem will take us with him to Eretz Yisrael. So we're dealing over here with different types of darkness and different types of light. Okay, that's one idea. I want to tell you another idea. This parsha's the beginning of the whole story we just mentioned, the whole story begins with Moshe saying to Paro, I'm going to kill your firstborn. Hinei anochi horeg es bincha b'chorecha. Okay, I'm gonna slaughter your firstborn. Okay, fine. Now, Parashas Bo begins. We're coming out to the finale, the last three makos, which we explain is really one makah. It's one makah with three different parts. And the beginning of the parasha says something different that it didn't say by any other makah. Opening the parasha. Here we go. She see to set in him. Uleman, you know what the purpose of all of this is about? Tisaper, that you, the Jewish people, shall relate the osnei vincha, the ears of your children, uven vincha, es asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim, I mat b'mitzrayim, the es oisosai asher samti vam, vidatem kini Hashem. The only time it says this is by this makom. Hashem says to Moshe, the purpose of all of this, that you shall relate to your children. Be'oznei vincha, the ears of your children, uven vincha, your grandchildren. That's very unusual. You don't have too often in Tanakh a principle of grandchildren. Very often you have children. V'shinantam levonecha, v'limaditem osam esbenecha. The Gemara tells mitzvahs habein al ha'av, grandchildren, leave me alone. Grandchildren, they're out of my domain. The only time you have this principle is matan Torah. V'hoidatem levonecha ulevnei vonecha yoim asher amarata lefnei Hashem kecha b'choyrev. The only other time, if I'm not mistaken, is right here. It's similar. It's the mockery.
The inference with the children of your children is inference forever.
Right. Exactly. So if you're adatim levnecha levnevnecha in both places, it means forever. It doesn't just mean literally your grandchildren. It means
you go one and two.
Exactly. It's a principle. You go all the way down. by non-Jews, grandchildren have a whole, you know, the very, what's one of the most, probably the most profound differences between Jews and non-Jews is the relationship to your grandchildren. By non-Jews, I can't speak for everyone, I don't know, but at least the impression that I get, it's a very, very big, very, very, very different type of relationship. By Klal Yisrael, the grandchildren, usually you see the grandparents, they have much more chibur for the grandchildren than their own children. By the Goyim, I can't speak for everyone, I don't know, you don't get that sense. You don't get that sense that there's such a significant connection between the grandparents and the grandchildren. There's connection, of course the connection, it's a human nature, but it's not like they view them as their legacy. It's just, you know, grandchildren, think about it, see, maybe what I'm saying is not true, but that here there's Lamanta Saber, because they, what is the purpose of all this? What's going on with it? So here's the observation. At the end of this parsha, what happens? What do we find? Paro's firstborn child is dead. And Paro is alive. And Paro comes begging Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, go. He comes running in the middle of the night. He bangs on the doors. Where is Moshe? Where is Aaron? Rashi says he wanted to know Aaron also. That's very interesting. He wanted to know where is Aaron, banging on the doors. And then finally, he says, go, take all of your animals, take all of your children, go. And then he says two words, or three words, which I think opens up the whole story in an entirely different world. And it changes everything. Uberachtem gam osi. Pray for me. Pray for me, I'm a Bukhar. And if all of the firstborns are dying, I'm afraid I'm going to die also. In the beginning of the story, in Parashat Shemos, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, go to Paro and tell Paro, I'm going to kill his firstborn child. I'm going to kill his firstborn. Moshe Rabbeinu is Moiser Nefesh. He takes his own child with him. It's a very interesting story. He takes, who was born at that moment in time? Eliezer. No, which one? Eliezer Gershom. I forgot already. And he takes him. And a malach comes to kill the firstborn child of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe doesn't seem too concerned. The one that has to come to the rescue is Sipora. She has to do a bris milah. And she says to Moshe, Moshe, what did you do? We almost lost our child, the malach came to kill you. You put our child, and okay, you have to go look at the Mefarshim, but Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't circumcise him because it's dangerous and this and that. So he takes his children with him and he goes. And in fact, when he arrives there in Egypt, Aaron says to him, Hashem says to him, what are you bringing your children here? We got enough problems here. You want to go bring more problems? Send your wife and your children back to Midian. Moshe, Hashem tells him, send your children back. It's a sakana here. And the malach comes to swallow up Moshe, in essence, for putting his children in danger. Again, look at the beginning of the story. The beginning of the story in Parashat Shemos, we just dance around some of the basic facts. This is I want to make an observation, try to bring out a point. In the beginning of the Parashat Shemos, Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, it's time for you to go and redeem the Jewish people. And you know what the message I want you to give to Paro is? If you don't shape up, you know what I'm going to do to you? I'm going to take away your firstborn child. Hinei onoichi hoireg es bincha bichorecha. From all of the messages that Hashem can tell Moshe to focus on, the only message Hashem says to Moshe to focus on is to tell Paro he's going to lose his firstborn child. Okay, that's it. Moshe packs up his bags and takes his wife and his children. He puts them in grave danger by going, traveling a newborn baby. You take a newborn baby out into the desert to travel back to Egypt, a place where they hate Jews, where they want to kill Jews. What do you do? And he doesn't care. He goes. On the way, a malach comes and wants to kill Moshe Rabbeinu because he didn't do a bris milah. He did do a bris milah. Okay, you have to analyze the story in more detail. But there's a tzviya on Moshe Rabbeinu regarding his child, regarding the fact that he did not properly take care of his child. The child needs a bris milah. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, have failed to care for the spiritual well-being of your child by not giving him a bris milah. And therefore, you're deserving of death. And the Malach comes and swallows him up. Tzipora comes to the rescue. She circumcises her child. The spiritual, you know, what is required, and thereby saves Moshe and gives Moshe Rabbeinu a Musa Shmuz, like a good wife lets her husband really have it. And then Moshe continues in his negligence. He continues to go to Egypt with his wife and his children. And Hashem says, Moshe, what are you doing? Why are you bringing them here? It's dangerous here. The most important thing, the most important obligation you have in your life is to your children, not to the people over here, to the Jewish people. Your obligation first is to your family. Send them back. Send them to a safe place. What are you bringing more hostages into a dangerous environment? So Moshe sends back Tzipora, and sends back his children. They did not witness Yitzias Mitzrayim. They first arrived for Matan Torah, or even, according to some, came after Matan Torah. Unbelievable. Hashem is giving Moshe Rabbeinu Musar twice. Moshe, what's important are your children, not the mission, your children. When Hashem sends a message to Paro, Hashem says to Paro, Paro, if you don't behave, I'm going to bring harm to your children. Hine onoichi choyreg es bincha bichoyrecha. So back in Parsha Shemos, there is an enormous emphasis upon by Hashem, focus not on you, focus on the children. Tell Paro, it's about the children, your child. You care about your child, you care that your firstborn child is going to lose his life if you don't listen to me. Do you really care? Moshe got a mission. Moshe goes on the mission and he neglects his children. He does not perform a bris milah. A bris milah is the most fundamental thing that a person has to do for his child. Mitzvah habein, a mitzvah that's to be done to a child, al ha'av. This is the purpose, this is the mitzvah, the 13 brisos that Hashem was koras in Aram Avinu. This, the identity of a Jew, you have a child, you want to have Jewish identity, Jewish continuity, don't forget to do a bris milah. This is all about Judaism, this is the future of Judaism, bris milah. Moshe is delinquent in his duties. And then he's delinquent a second time by continuing to Mitzrayim and putting them in danger again. And Hashem gives Moshe Musar twice. He sends the Malach to kill him, and he only survived because of Tzipora. And he gives them Musar, and he says, why did you bring over here your children to Egypt? Send them back. Okay, that was Parsha Shemos. Fast forward to the end of this week's Parsha. The very end of this week's Parsha. Paro's firstborn child is dead. And Paro says to Moshe, pray for me. I want to live. This says it all. The entire story of Paro is a story of selfishness. A selfish person. The only thing he cares about is himself. He doesn't care about his child. He was warned from the very beginning, Hinei anochi horeges bincha bicharecha. What should Paro have said? Kill me and let my child live. That's what any Jewish parent would say. They would say, the children I lived knew. I didn't live to 120, I didn't live to 200 years old, but my children come first. That is the Jewish way. And Hashem made, and that should be the way for Goyim also. That should be the way for Goyim. But at the end of the day, after Paro keeps up, Hashem keeps on warning Paro, you know, the firstborns are going to die, and you have a firstborn. He doesn't care. Yeah, so no, take my first. What do I care about? Uberachtem gamos, as long as I don't die. Why is he so concerned about himself? Uverachtem gamoisi. Why didn't you do something to save your firstborn child? Did you ever open up your mouth one time in all of the warnings after seeing nine makos, what the Koyach of Hashem and Hashem is saying that all the firstborns are going to die. I told you this from day one. You were warned about this from day one. In Parsha Shemos, the end game is Hinei Anoichi Hoireg Es Bincha Bichoirecha. Remember what's going to happen. I'm giving you nine chances. Did you ever once consider the consequences of violating Hashem's command after nine chances? Couldn't care. Why? You know why? Because you don't care about your children. What do you care about? Yourself. How do I know you care about yourself? Because at the end, what did you say? Uberachtem gamosi. Your whole country is going down in flames. The whole country is being destroyed right in front of your eyes. And all you care about is me. Me, 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 me. The selfish nature of a leader is the root of this enormous, enormous corruption. I'll give you an example. Now, I have to be very careful what I say because I really, really don't want to get into any politics. Chas v'shalom. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a rabbi. And I know nothing. I just want to repeat to you a conversation that I heard. A video that was floating around. This is about a month ago when they first started releasing the vaccines, promoting the vaccines for children. Okay, I don't know anything, what's right, what's wrong. I'm not here, chas v'shalom, to get involved in any of this. I know zero. But I want to pick you a conversation, and it really, really, really shocked me. This was a doctor. It appears from the video that he was a very prominent doctor who worked for the government in the United Kingdom. And it seemed from the way they presented, he was part of, the equivalent of the CDC in the United Kingdom. And they were just then releasing, promoting that children should receive the vaccine. And someone was interviewing him, Mesiach Lefi Tumo. And he asked the doctor very politely, he basically says that this is unprecedented in medical history to give, these are very powerful medications, and we certainly hope and want the best for everyone, but in medical history, we've never done this. We've never given, normally the gold standard is 5 years. People can volunteer. But they said the gold standard is 5 years. We wait 5 years to see everything should be okay. And then we're doing this. We only have data, about 6 months of data. What do you say? Is this, do you really feel that this is children? These are children. No, we're only adults. We're not talking about adults. We're talking about young children. What do you say? And he wasn't embarrassed to say the following. And obviously the United Kingdom is a very irreligious country. And he basically says, we really don't know. But we're afraid for ourselves. We're adults. I'm over 60 years old. And I want to live. And my colleagues, we all want to live. And if we don't wipe out this disease in the world by wiping it off the face of the earth, by giving it to the children, they may be carriers. And if they'll be carriers, I'm vulnerable. I'm scared. I'm vulnerable. My colleagues are all scared. So this is what we have to do. It's a war. This is what we have to do. What's going to happen to the children in the future? Whatever will happen, will happen. Whatever will be, will be. We hope it will be okay. Again, I know people get upset at me. I say certain things. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a rabbi. I don't know anything. But it just struck me the incredible selfishness. You mean the whole thing is based upon you're selfish? You care about yourself? You want to do, people should be forced to do things that are not in the next generation. This is the next generation of humanity. Because you care about yourself so much? Now let me tell you the flip side of the story. In the height of Corona, there was, not the height of Corona, it was already towards the end of the first wave. Okay, lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. And then people were beginning to come out of their holes. And there were certain shuls that were beginning to open up. And there were people, their health is compromised. And they wanted to go to shul very, very much. But the younger people, they had enough. Whether it's right or wrong is none of my business. And they basically wanted to relax most of the restrictions. Not to the satisfaction of people that are older, elderly people, who are very scared and vulnerable. And, you know, every shul did whatever they wanted to do. But I remember listening to one person who was very, very bitter. And he said, these young people, it's not fair. It's not fair. Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz, Kodmu L'Torah, Kibir Avoim, that they save a Tokum, and everyone here, even though the people who felt afraid were 10%, they have to conform. This is the Torah. This is the Torah demands that the young people show Derech Eretz. And they have to inconvenience, even though among themselves they don't care, but they have their mechuyev al pi halacha to inconvenience themselves to the nth degree, to be mechabed their parents, their grandparents, and the elderly people, that they should have full satisfaction. That was an argument that was made, and some people, yes, they did. There were many shuls that did actually following that mahalich, where our greatest kavod and honor for Klal Yisrael are our parents, our grandparents, and elderly people that are, you know, more in this matzav. It's clear that the older a person is, the more sensitive they are, and that's what Klal Yisrael is all about to give kavod to the Messiah. And there were many, many places where it was an honor to encourage those people to return and to accommodate them 100%. So here you have a Yiddish mahalich of to give kavod to our elders, our leaders. And then you have a mahalich where the other story, this doctor, this conversation in the United Kingdom. There's one very interesting thing. Who's saying what? There's a difference between when elderly people make demands versus where the younger people are the ones that are making demands. It's one thing to be required. It's a mitzvah to do, but For the people who are vulnerable to be toiveya, that doesn't seem to be a Jewish thing either. That doesn't seem to be. You always see in Klal Yisrael the older generation to put their children first. Mitzad sheni, it is the obligation of the younger people to put their grandparents and the Zakenim first. So this is a very complicated topic, which I don't know anything about, but just the fact that it's percolating in my mind and it percolates in everyone's mind, what's going on in this world in these last 2 years, you read this parsha, it just leaps off the page. It leaps off the page, this difference between who comes first. Who comes first? In the beginning of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem says to Paro, your child is going to your bechor. There's going to be makas bechoros. Does that mean anything to you? Does it mean anything to you? What's going to happen to your bechor? That's the message that is going through the mind of Paro from the beginning of the story to the end of the story. It's a very disturbing pasuk. It always bothered me. Why in Parsha Shemos does Hashem say to Moshe, you're in Midian, you're a shepherd, enough, it's time to go to work already. No more kollel, time to get a job. I got a job for you. You're going to take my people out of Mitzrayim. Pack up, take the matah, you're going to go to Paro. There's only one thing you have to say to Paro when you see Paro. Say to him, Hineni hoireg es bincha b'chorech. What? We're not up to that yet. There's first supposed to be all the different oisais with the hands turning into tzaras and the stick swallowing up the stick of paro. There are three simonim, and then there's a whole process of conversation. They should let them don't work so hard. Paro gets angry. No, they're going to work even harder. I'm not going to provide the straw. Then we first gear up for dam, tzardeya, kinim. You're what's going on over here? We're not up to that yet. Patience, one thing at a time. Relax. No, right away. For the very, very first moment, hinini hoireg es bincha bicharech. What do you? And this thought was put into the mind of Paro in the very beginning, and it carries all the way through until it actually happens. Why? Why? Why, when Moshe Rabbeinu was recruited and Moshe Rabbeinu went to Egypt with his family, was HaKadosh Baruch Hu so critical of the way Moshe is dealing, handling his children? Why? Why, at the end of the story, is Paro's Bechor dead and Paro's still alive? And the only thing Paro still wants is, he says, Uberachtem gamoisi. Oh, pray for me. I'm also a Bechor. I'm going to die. I'm scared about myself. And how does the story, and how does the story of Parshas Bo end? It ends with tefillin. And I can never forget what it says in the Rashbam. The Rashbam on the tefillin, he asked the Yavi, why do you have to have two parshios that say almost exactly the same thing? Parshas Kaddish and Parshas V'hayoki Yiviyacha say almost exactly the same thing. And the Rashbam says something that is so poshut, but is so profound and is shocking almost. He says that when you ask the average person to read the end of Parshas Bo, it says, V'hayah, it will be, ki yisholcha v'incha mocher leymar, mazos. Your children are going to ask you, what this all about? So you know what you say to him? V'yamar te'la, b'chozek yod, chotzim Hashem, b'mitzvah, b'beis avodim. Period. That's the whole answer. That's all you say to the children. You just say to the children one pasuk. If your children are going to ask you, what's going on, Dad? What's this whole ceremony about Pesach? You say, I'll tell you, because Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim with the Yod Chazakah. The Rashbam says, wrong. That's not the answer. The answer continues. When your children ask you a question, what's going on? You say to them, Hashem took us out, b'chozek yod, and vayihi kik shofaro l'shalchenu, vayaharoik Hashem, es kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem wiped out every firstborn, the children. Hashem wiped out their children. I sacrifice all of the firstborns. And I redeem my child. I value my children. And this is why you put on tefillin. The entire statement over here is what the father tells the children. The father tells the children that we value children. We value our future. Paro couldn't care less. It's exactly it. The children ask the father, Dad, what's this all about? So the father basically says to him, we once were in Egypt, and we lived in a society where the head of state could not care less about the future of the people. He could not care less about the children. Because he was warned from day one, if you don't let us out, you're not going to have children. Your children, the Bukhari is going to be killed. He couldn't care less. So Hashem wiped out his children. But by us, we value the future. How do we value the future? Every firstborn animal we offer as a sacrifice to show how much we value the beginning, the firstborn. Every child that's born we redeem to show the value of having a Bukhar. And you have to remember how much we value you, my child. And you're going to wear in your head an ois and a zikaron of how much we value the future of Klal Yisrael. Don't be like Paro, who's selfish. Uberachtem gamoisi. Just make sure you bless me. Make sure that I don't die. I don't care that my child is dead. I don't care about that. I care about myself. Selfishness. Pure selfishness. The entire hashkafa, the entire value, ideology, and doctrine of the country is all based on, I'm entitled to live another 20, 30 years. I'm 60 years old. I want to make it until I'm 90. I'm entitled. So if I have to slaughter all the children, it's okay. I'm entitled. Is that the proper way? Is that the proper thing to do? Is that the proper? I'm not telling you what's proper. I know that obviously there's some type of balance, because in Mitzad Echad, the greatest Teferes Avos, Teferes Bonim Avosa, the glory of the children are their parents. That's Pashat. But Mitzad Sheni, it is a reality in the history of Klal Yisrael that many, many Jewish parents gave up their lives so their children can have a future. We offer to Hashem the Bechor to show how much we value. We offer, we redeem Pidyon HaBen. It's Binoreinu v'Zekineinu Neilech. There is Binoreinu v'Zekineinu, there's the Neoreinu. There is this very difficult balance. I'll give you another example. I went to the Aguda convention. I told you, I warned you. I'm going to go to that convention. I went to work as a worker. Very dangerous. I'll get enough material to make litzanis for years. And something very, very interesting happened there. And someone actually said this to me, the Aguda, and I don't mean anything chashol and bad. The Aguda, they're very into now this idea, the young people have to get involved. You have to get the young people involved in the recruiting and leadership, blah, 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 all of hulu, the hulu. They've gone so far in trying to get the young people involved that there's no longer a tsura, someone made this comment to me, of zakenim. You know, it used to be back in the day, like when I was a little kid, you know, you go to, you see on the picture books, you see the dais of an Aguda convention, the CMH, I remember the first CMH, the first one in Madison Square Garden. Who's sitting on the dais? Everyone there had a white beard. No gray hairs allowed. It was all white hairs on the days. Zakenim. And that's the way it's supposed to be. They're supposed to be Zakenim. They are the Einei Ho'eda. They have life experience. They have the Mesorah. Now, we need young people, every yeshiva, they're firing all the Rebbeim because they have to have energy, youth, vibrancy. You've done such a good job of bringing in all the young people. You look at the dais, no one has a white beard. And you know something? Something is missing. There's something missing. There's no question that there's this goal, this beauty, this hiddur of our zakenim. But it's also a reality in this world that the zakenim, Their mission is B'ni B'choiri Yisrael. Where do you draw the balance? I don't know. It's a very dangerous question. Where do you draw the balance? That's not my domain to go. But the parsha here, it just leaps off the page. It leaps off the page. B'ni B'chori Yisrael, Paro couldn't care less. The only thing, he's a crybaby. U'beirachtem gamoisi. Why didn't you say to me, u'beirachtem es b'ni? Why did you say, oisi? What happened to give a bracha to my child? That my child should not have died? All this time, you saw people dying from the very beginning. It didn't mean anything to you. That is the musr. That is the ultimate musr of this parsha. Don't be like them. There has to be a balance. Like I told you, go to that Aguda convention, there's no one with a white beard on the dais, you got a big problem. Big problem. Has to be a balance. But there has to be an appreciation, Klal Yisrael, v'higadta levincha Bayoy Malchu Lemar, the future of Klal Yisrael is what the role, the mission of the Zakenim is. We're living now in a world where it's becoming pretty obvious, is in the Goyisha world, is a struggle in dealing with these very difficult situations, is the proper balance. And what for them may be the proper balance, which I don't know anything, is that the proper balance for us? It's something to think about. Something to analyze in the mitzvahs of this week's, of the sugya of this week's parasha. Hope I didn't say anything that is inappropriate or wrong, but I wanted to get off my chest. I want to tell you one very, very short vart because it was so delicious. This vart I heard, a very short vart. It struck me this week. Very quick. It's not going to take more than 2 minutes. This week, there are two things that are very striking. It says the Jewish people lived in Egypt. Moshe b'nei Yisrael asher yoshvu b'mitzrayim 430 years. What are you talking about? They were only in Egypt for 210 years. 430 years. So Rashi says, they were gerim from the Leidas Yitzchok until Yitzias Mitzrayim. They were gerim in strange territory. Because Eretz Canaan, we didn't own it. We were gerim. But that's only 400 years. So where's the other 30 years? Rashi says, from the Bris Ben Abbasarim. The Bris Ben Abbasarim is when the 430 years start. You know, it's a very difficult, because the Pasuk says, Yoshvu, they dwelt. They lived in Egypt. They didn't live in Egypt. They lived in Eretz Canaan. They were Gerim, Seshavim, but they were not in Egypt. Yet the Pasuk is telling us we lived there for 430 years. We didn't live there for 430 years. What does that mean they lived there for 430 years? That's question number one. Question number two. When Paro wakes up in the middle of the night because everyone is dying, who does he call? Rashi says he calls Moshe. Heichon Moshe. Veheichon Aaron. Since when is Paro interested in Aaron? Where is Moshe? Where is Aaron? What does he want Aaron for? What does he need Aaron for? So I went last week to a Shalom Zohar. And a Shalom Zohar. Shalom Zohar, a neighbor. And a Vleza Ginsburg. The Rosh Hashiva of Mir Yeshiva. One of the Rosh Mir Yeshiva, he was there and he spoke. He spoke very, very, very well. And he said something which really was very interesting. He said, why do we need Moshe and Aaron? What's Moshe? Moshe is to take the Jew out of Egypt. Aaron's role was to take the Egypt out of the Jew. There are two forms of Egypt. We have to leave. The Jew has to be pulled out of Egypt. But there is an Egypt in every single Jew that needs to be also extracted. Moshe took the Jew out of Egypt. Aaron, his role of the Kohen Tzedek, the Kedusha, was to pull the Egypt out of the Jew. Klali, when Moshe, when Paro, the mission was both Moshe and Aaron. We want to get rid of you, Paro, through and through. Heichon Moshe veheichon Aaron. It's time for the Jew to leave Egypt and for Egypt to leave the Jew. When it says they were there for 430 years, the first 30 years, it wasn't the Pshat. Even though we didn't need anyone to take us out of Egypt, but for those first 30 years, there was an Egypt in the Jew. The world, the dominant power of the world at that time was Egypt. Their influence spread far and wide. Avraham Avinu living in the land of Canaan, there was Egypt living within him. And the Golus of Mitzrayim was, we were only there in the land for 210 years. So we only need, so when the Yetzias Mitzrayim took the Jew out of Egypt that we've been for 210 years. But the other chelik of Klal Yisrael living in Egypt was where Egypt lived in the Jew. And that was even true the first years. But I'll tell you, Hollywood controls the world. The entertainment, the product that comes out of Hollywood spreads to the entire world. Even someone sitting in the Kollel Chazoinish on a hill in Bnei Brak is affected by the product that comes out of Hollywood. That's the whole world. The whole world, it trickles down. There is the Egypt in the Jew. The Yitzias Mitzrayim was the success of two things. Moshe v'Aaron, Shekulim Heim. Moshe took the Jew out of Egypt, and Aaron took the Egypt out of the Jew. Rabbis, I thank you very much for coming and listening to the wonderful Shabbos. His Kedusha. Aaron did that through his holiness. Oyev Shalom, the Roidev Shalom. He was the Kohen Gadol. He did it through his Kedusha.
So why okay. Did Paro want Aaron? I don't understand. So
because that was that's part of the Gula. That this is the moment of Gula, and Paro understood that it's like for example Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, when he saw that he could not destroy Yerushalayim, what did he do? He made a decree that you should name your children after me, and you should start your document should be dated the Minyan Shtaros. I'm not going to touch you, but I'm going to penetrate your essence. If your children are called Alexander, what's going to happen? They're going to have Gedolim pictures in their house. I'm going to be part of the Gedolim pictures. If my name is Alexander, don't you think I want to know who I look like? So you see on the wall, there's Alexander the Great. You're going to think about me every single day. Let me learn about him. What was his life like? What were his values? If your marriage document is dated 55 years since Alexander the Great conquered the world, you're going to talk about me. That's going to trickle down into your neshama. So Alexander the Great was not able to conquer Yerushalayim, but he was able to penetrate their neshamas. Avraham Avinu was living in a world that was dominated by Egypt. Even though you're not living in Egypt, you're affected by Egypt. Western civilization is not just in America. It's all over the world. Okay, everybody, so we're finished. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you for coming and listening. All the best to you. Ron, Shalom Aleichem. How are you? How's everything? You don't have a minion. Do you have a minion still going by you?
What?
Do you have a minion still going by you?
I have a what?
A minion in your background.
You have no minion? Oh, no.
Today wouldn't be a good day for that minion.
We did it last year.
I know. No, Tamari, we all want to say good Shabbos to you. Tamari. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, Tamari. We see you. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Harav, Dr. Colonel Cohn Schlieffer. How are you? How are you, Rabbi Cohn? You're on mute.
He's on mute.
Rabbi Cohn, you have to turn. You have to unmute yourself. The bottom left of the screen. Oh, you got it.
Smola.
Sunday. Are the women coming?
Okay.
Alan, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, Alan. Good Shabbos. Sorry?
It's snowy.
Yes. Snow, ice, slush, everything. A lot going on here. A lot of precipitation.
A good Shabbos.
Thank you for coming. Shabbos. Safta, Rav Baruch Horowitz. I saw Shui today on the way in. He said, "Do you think anyone's going to come?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "There's food here. They'll come for the food." Okay.
Shabbos. That was fantastic.
I was too controversial. I tried to be very clean. I tried to be clean, not to go any direction.
Rabbi, wasn't Paro all about ego? No one's going to tell him what to do.
Selfishness.
But ego is part of selfishness.
Yeah, it is. That's probably the ichor part of ego.
Such a point that you can't tell me what to do. Even if my kids died, you can't tell me what to do.
Is that shocking?
Yeah.
It's shocking.
For our culture, it is not for them.
Oh, that's the amazing thing. Why not? Why isn't it for them also shocking?
It's not the same. They have a different culture.
That's part of the big mystery.
How about the Muslims who are willing to sacrifice their kids? And it's mind-boggling for us to think that you can send your kid to get killed to prove a point, which is a false point to begin with.
Exactly.
So when you talk about the dais at the convention, so first of all, the Zionists of the Shah, you have a timer of Shmuel, the Zionists of the Shah.
He wasn't sure.
He's 98, he has a dark beard.
He wasn't even, I mean, he was barely there. He came Thursday for a short time. I know what you're saying.
But also, on the other hand, there's a difference. Give me an example. But Aaron Feldman, he's a young 88. Rabbi Moshe was 88, he didn't even go to the convention because he was not 12. Years ago, right, when people were in the 80s, they weren't
you know, they're all people.
Right, it all depends. You can't generalize. There are many, many... Right, right. Yeah.